Welcome to the Unfolding Podcast. I am Erica Vohl. I am a decision mentor and inner trust guide, and I work with women, mainly those in midlife, trust their inner guidance, understand their unique strengths, and stop saying yes to what drains them. Using human design, coaching, and Reiki, we clear the noise so their no feels powerful and their yes feels true. This week, we have a really special episode. This is my first guest episode on the Unfolding Podcast. And I had the pleasure of sitting down with Angela Lee. She's a working mom of three with a full-time job in marketing. She's also the host of the podcast, This Is How She Does It. It's a podcast for working moms navigating that beautiful chaos of life. This conversation was such a delight, and we talk about Angela's story, the way human design has impacted her life and her family, and how she's bringing it into her work with clients. It's full of those moments where you will find yourself nodding along. So let's dive in. Welcome, Angela, to the Unfolding Podcast. I'm so excited you are my first guest. I connected with Angela on a human design group that we are part of, and I just saw her story and listened to her story, and I connected so deeply with her, and I knew she had to be my first guest, listening to that generator sacral. So, Angela, tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you do.
Hi, Erica. Thank you. I am so honored that you have invited me on to be your first guest. So thank you. Thank you. And I'm really excited to connect with you and share a little bit more about my story. First, I'll say that, as you have mentioned in my intro, I am a working mom. So I have a corporate job in marketing, and I also have three kids. They're elementary school age now, but my son is 9 years old, and then I have twin girls who are 8 years old. So I basically found out when my son was 7 months old that I was pregnant with not one, but two. So that was like the biggest shock of my life. And I just kind of kept going with work, right? I took the, you know, your normal 3 months off when I had my son. I went back to work, and one of the first things that I really struggled with going back into corporate work was, you know, I have my MBA. I was always super ambitious, wanted to climb the corporate ladder. And for me personally, I was pretty okay about, you know, going to work and being very like zoned into work. My mom watched my son that first year. So I knew I had very consistent childcare and like just giving my mom, my son to my mom, like, it wasn't, you know, I know other people go to daycare or have other childcare situations. So I just knew my son was loved and protected, and that wasn't a big concern for me. So when I was at work, I was really able to be very focused at work. And then coming home, I was able to, well, this is a place where I like couldn't get work out of my head, right? I was actually working for a company in a global role at the time. I was the marketing manager for Asia Pacific region. And so when I went home, I had to like pick up my son, somehow make him food, or I don't know, I was probably just still bottle feeding him at the time, but feed my husband and I, try to semi keep the house clean. And then it was putting my son to bed, and he was a terrible sleeper. And so by 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock PM Eastern, I was jumping on another phone call with Asia Pacific because it's now 8 or 9 a.m. on their side. And I remember sitting in my son's room because he's not sleeping. Now it's 8 o'clock and I'm just like holding him and rocking him. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Why am I still working at this time? And I knew, you know, that's kind of the nature of the global world that I was in. But I just like did not have any work-life balance when I was out of the office environment. And that was hard for me. I really didn't know how to put in boundaries for myself. And I think the biggest kind of learning for myself coming out of through this whole experience was we don't talk about it. Like I was okay at work because kind of my child was out of sight, out of mind. I knew my mom was taking care of him. But we're also expected to work like we don't have children and parent like we don't have full-time jobs. And I was really struggling because at work, no one talked about what they were doing once they got home. And I knew I worked with a lot of female leaders. They were all also working moms, but they didn't talk about that second shift and how were they grocery shopping and how were they making dinner. And, you know, yes, maybe their kids were older at that time, but I really didn't know how to do the being a parent, being a mom part of it. But luckily, I did have a group of other mom friends who I worked with, and we all had babies within 4 months of each other. So that was really helpful because they ended up being my support network. They were my group who I could text in the middle of the night to be like, what is going on? Why is he still crying? What does he eat now that he's, you know, 6 months old and we're supposed to start solids? So I really needed that community. And I felt it was very disconnected. Yes, I had this working mom group within my company, but I still had to look elsewhere for some of the mom support. And I really struggled with integrating everything together because I just felt like at work, everyone said they were fine, but we never talked about the real struggles of being a working parent. And that transition was very, very challenging for me. And like I said, 14 months after I had my son, I had twin girls. So I was thrown into this again. And this time I had a little bit more wherewithal about how to kind of manage the struggle. And I did move into a different role that didn't have me online at 8 or 9 p.m. So that helped. And I was able to talk to my manager about it. But this is all kind of what inspired me to want to help working moms, because I do believe that working moms, I want people to go up the ladder. I want them to be leaders in our society. But I've seen so many women throughout the years have to hold themselves back, or during COVID, they all left the workforce because our society isn't built for working moms. And I want to give them inspiration and hope and let them know that, you know, we don't have to hustle. We don't have to burn out. And I can share a little bit more about when I finally did burn out. But I will say in those first couple of years when I had the kids and I had my mom helping, I was on that hamster wheel and I was struggling every day. But at the same time, I hadn't gotten to that place of burnout yet. So that's a little bit about my story and why I started my podcast, which is called This Is How She Does It.
I love that. And I listened to your story about burnout, and our journeys feel very similar. I burned out in 2022, and I just felt like, why doesn't anybody notice what's happening? And I would say things, and I was like, is anybody going to help me? My daughter is 11 now, but it started during the pandemic, and it was really like things were much harder. And for some reason, things that we thought, like, there were things that were just sort of, we were piecing together because we were both working. But then when we were all home at the same time and having to school and take care of a kid, and like, it was just, things came up in the bubbled to the surface that I didn't even realize would be there. And it just, the support that they were saying we were getting at work did not feel like support at all. And so I really connected with your story, and putting everyone first seems to be a common experience for so many women I work with. And we tend to forget about, you know, the most important person. I've been talking a lot lately about like, the oxygen mask, put on your own oxygen mask first. But generally, we put on 31 oxygen masks before we ever think about our own. So,
yeah,
so tell
absolutely.
Us about your burnout journey, and or however you went.
Yes. Well, thanks for asking. So very similar to you. It was during COVID where I couldn't keep all these balls up in the air anymore. And I really felt the weight and that pressure. And that's that time where I was like, okay, something needs to change. Something needs to be different. So I will say, kind of backing up a tiny bit, in 2019, my twin girls were like 2.5. So I was finally at a point where I was like, okay, they're bigger now and I can start taking care of myself again. So I started going to the gym. I started just like finding little pockets of time, because I had always recognized that I needed to do my own self-care. And so this was the first opportunity for me to be like, okay, like I can start, you know, doing a little bit more of that self-care now. And so that was like probably in the summer of 2019. I got back into an exercise routine. But then, you know, now fast forward 6 months later, and now we're in 2020. world shuts down in March of 2020 with the COVID pandemic. And I will say my husband and I were both working full-time corporate jobs, and I had a very wonderful and understanding manager. And so this was in the early days where no one knew what was going on, and we just kind of had to piece it together and figure it out. And so for me and my husband, we kind of figured out a schedule where if he had a 9 o'clock meeting, then I would do the 10 o'clock meeting. And my kids were still so young, so I couldn't put them in front of a TV. I couldn't like let them just hang out by themselves. Like a parent had to physically be in the room with them. So I felt like I was running a preschool, but he would go upstairs, he would take his call, and then he would come down and I would run upstairs and I would take my call. And this was the first time where I could actually set boundaries. Because if you remember, if you rewind back to when I first became a working mom, I really had no idea how to put boundaries in for myself. It was just not something I'd ever thought about before. But this is the first time where I was like, it is lunchtime. I need to stop work. I need to make food for my kids. I need to feed them. And I also need to feed myself. So I didn't feel any guilt around. It was the first time where I didn't feel guilty because I had to literally like feed my kids. And then during that COVID spring and summer, like this is when my kids learned to ride bikes. We would go outside and I would just had the opportunity for the first time ever to really like be present with them. My husband and I would take walks. And when the kids were napping, because they were still doing a morning nap and an afternoon nap, but this was when we could really like focus our time and energy, get the emails, get the work done. So we actually, during those early years, as crazy as it was and as crazy as the sound, I kind of figured out a pretty good work-life balance. It was still hard and it was still challenging, but I think it was the first time I realized I could actually say no to things and not feel guilty about it and be like, okay, work, I'll come back to you when I'm ready. But I really need to like take care of my kids. They need to run outside. Then now they're napping. So now I can come back and do some work. So now you fast forward into fall of 2020 and preschools are all starting to open back up again. And so luckily we were able to get our kids into one preschool together. So it was like for the first time ever, they had one drop off. And so my husband and I would drop them off in the morning and literally we would come back home, sit in front of our computers, and I would barely get up because now we've been in COVID for a little while. Like, no, you know, now we're fully remote. No one knows when offices are going to open back up. Like, luckily, schools have kind of opened back up. But now my work environment had changed, and I was in back-to-back meetings. From the second I sat down at 9 o'clock, I would not get up to eat lunch or make lunch or do anything. And sometimes at like 3 o'clock, my husband would like throw me a Chipotle burrito because he had somehow like an hour earlier was like, okay, I need to go online and like DoorDash some Chipotle so we can keep ourselves dead and sane today. And then by 4 o'clock, we had to go pick up the kids and then do our whole evening routine with them. And this is where I really burnt out because I had forgotten. Like I had forgotten that I could have this more like balanced lifestyle with the kids. As soon as the kids were out of the house, I forgot to take care of myself. I literally was not eating. I was not walking outside anymore. And it was just back on that hamster wheel a little bit because the work environment that I was in became a little toxic because we were all like trying to figure out this new normal. And so like literally you were late to your next meeting because like your meetings, just one meeting ends at 10 and the next meeting starts at 10. And so there was like no buffer time. So I like barely even got up to go to the bathroom. It was ridiculous. And so this is when I was like, oh gosh, like I don't know what to do. I cannot continue to operate like this anymore. And this is where I had to, again, consciously make those efforts to say, I'm going to go for a walk, even if it's like 10 minutes outside. I need to block my calendar. I own my calendar. I cannot just allow people to dump all these meetings on my calendar and not have any boundaries for myself, right? Like the only two boundaries I had during those early days was I got to get the kids to daycare and I have to go pick them up at 4 o'clock. And so I slowly had to reteach myself to put in boundaries, make sure I was taking care of myself, make sure I was eating, make sure I was going outside. And part of this time period was also when I started discovering or going through my own personal development journey, because I was at a point where I was like, what am I doing all of this for? I had checked off all the boxes that someone says you need to be successful in life. And I recognized the reason why I couldn't hold these boundaries for myself is because I had a lot of like low self-esteem and low self-worth issues that didn't really come up until this point when A, the world has shut down and there's no other distractions to figure out. And this is where, so my son is probably about 5 at this point, where I kind of felt this like intuition, this niggle within me to be like, remember, you really want to do something to help working women. Like, you really need to help yourself first. And once you can figure that out, you can help spread that message with others. And so that's when I first had the idea of doing the podcast and trying to ask the universe, like, what is my mission? What is my purpose? And so at first it was like, how can I figure this out for myself and then maybe coach other women? But I knew because I was still in a corporate job, I ended up only launching the podcast earlier this year. So it was something that's been on my heart for over 4 years to do. And the timing hadn't really worked out until now. But that was the time where I truly burned out. And it was also where I started, you know, doing some meditation, really connecting back with my intuition. And also about the time that I learned about my own human design, which is also what kind of helped me reframe some of the limiting beliefs I had, remember my own innate superpowers, and pull myself out of this like hamster wheel of just living for everyone else.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I know so many people are like, I feel you. I feel that. It's so interesting how we went from this like, you know, it was okay to take care of your kids. That was a boundary that we was respected to. I remember those back-to-back-to-back meetings, and it was like, what are we doing? I had never had so many meetings in my entire life, my entire career. And we were just going and going and going, and like nobody thought about. I remember putting lunch on my calendar, and I remember getting questioned about it. I was like, I need to eat. At the library, we got an hour for lunch, and I was going to claim that back. But it was hard. So you talked a little bit about what you started to do. So meditation and other things that you did. So what are things that you did to support yourself, but also that you have continued to support yourself through this journey? Is there anything new you've tried?
Yeah. So I think what was missing in my life before, or when I was stuck in this cycle, is that I wasn't doing anything for myself. And I will say, when I first went through my motherhood journey, I had seen other friends have kids. And I remember very consciously being like, I'm not going to lose myself in this process. And I, at the time, I didn't really know what that meant. But I remember feeling like, I still want to be me. And so even when the kids were really little, I would still go out with girlfriends. I would still like find those opportunities and times to be away from the kids. And my husband has always been very, very supportive of that. And he's the one who actually like pushes me out the door and be like, go out to dinner, go do something else. So I always was able to kind of maintain this sense of self. But I think what I wasn't doing during this COVID time of burnout was like fueling my soul. Like, it's one thing to just like go out and hang out with friends, but it didn't feel like more fulfilled and purposeful than like I just had a nice dinner out, right? And so I think that is all very important, and we all need to have those social connections, but I wasn't doing anything that was like truly lighting me up. And now, knowing that I'm a generator, I realize like, if I don't have that thing that like truly lights me up and gets me excited, then the rest of my energy is depleted because I just kind of have nothing to feel excited about. And so I started really tuning into my intuition and following these breadcrumbs a little bit more around like what is popping up and what are some of those themes that are consistently coming up for me. So one thing was like before COVID happened, I started this yoga practice, as I was saying, and I met this teacher, I guess. And he, I remember, was, and he would do like meditation classes in a corporate environment. And it was like me and one other lady, because that was kind of weird at the time. And even I felt very weird being like, I'm going to do a meditation during lunch hour in this giant conference room. And there's three of us. But I remember him saying, our world is out of balance right now. And we are moving too fast. Like things will slow down. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I guess like 6 months later, COVID happened and the world slowed down. And I texted him and was like, you are exactly right. Like we didn't know what was going to happen, but I had no idea. Like I could not understand what you were saying 6 months ago. And you, it like came true. Like you predicted this. And that's where like the world of spirituality kind of, it opened up my eyes because I started following like these spirituality groups on Facebook. And then I saw stuff about the Akashic Records come up. And so I was like, oh, that's interesting. What is that? So I took like a little mini course to learn more about the Akashic Records. And for those who don't know what the Akashic Records is, it's basically like imagine a library of all the thoughts, feelings, and experiences of your soul, like past life experiences as well. And through these little like things that just felt exciting to me, because I have that sacral response and I can't explain why or how, but I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. And so I would like pay for this class. And then I would, I took this class and I was like, I'm still like kind of struggling with figuring out this whole Akashic Records thing. And then I met another woman who read my records. And then I was like, I feel like this is something that I should be doing too, or I can do. So she mentored me and helped me open up my Akashic Records. And then she was like, I think you can do this for some other people. And again, I can't even explain it. But when she took me through the Akashic Records my first time, and helped me open this up for myself and others, it wasn't like she taught me anything. It was like I remembered how to do something. Like my soul remembered how to tap into the Akashic Records, which isn't something I had done on this earthly plane, right? In this lifetime. But I really was able to connect to my soul in a different way. And this was lighting me up so much. It gave me something else. Like you can do the meditations and you can walk in nature and you can do an exercise routine. And those are all things that we should do for our mental health, our physical health. But somehow my soul was like craving something else. And so the Akashic Records, one thing led to another. And then I did find out about human design and got an initial reading with a woman. And I had shared on the podcast that you had listened to. It just cracked me open to a whole different level of, she saw me in a way no one else had ever seen me. And she could identify that I was a people pleaser and that I really did not know how to hold boundaries. And I have an open heart center and I have like no willpower on my own. And everything she said resonated with me so deeply. And because I'm also a 1-3, so the one line is all about research. And she had also told me, like, I don't feel comfortable unless I know everything. Like, unless I know everything about something, then I don't feel comfortable sharing it. And she was like, but I guarantee you that you, if you know, like, 5% more than someone else, you know, like, way more than everyone else. Or if you know 5% of that subject, you know way more than anyone else. And so she kind of gave me that confidence to, like, really honor my natural innate superpowers, which no one's ever shared that with me on that level before. I mean, I've done Myers-Briggs, I've done Enneagram, and those I always like felt like put me in a box, whereas human design showed me the possibility. It showed me the potential. And the other thing she had shared with me was that I have a defined throat center. It was also a kid who, growing up in a Chinese family where kids were basically taught to be seen and not heard, don't talk back, don't question why, like, I'm your parent, I shut down my throat center and voice at a very, very young age. I did not talk in school. I could do my work. I could get perfect grades by doing the work, but I never participated in class. I never raised my hand. I was petrified of everything, like the judgment, being a perfectionist. And when she told me I had a defined throat center, it really changed how I saw myself. And then I worked on that piece, that how do I express myself through my voice? And the fact that I started this podcast earlier this year is really a testament of the work that I've done to overcome a lot of these limiting beliefs that I've held on to since childhood. So I guess that was a long and meandering way of answering your question, but I think beyond just the physical things like exercising and going for walks in nature, I think what I needed to do was find that thing that really lit up my sacral energy and connected with my soul. And that's what got me out of that burnout mode, because I wasn't doing anything that was like lighting me up from that sacral energy.
Oh, I have chills, because when I learned about human design through my therapist, when I was hitting some of the same walls as I was healing through burnout, and she was like, I just want you to go look up your human design. And I was like, okay, is this like eat right for your blood type? What? And I had never felt so seen. I am a 5-1, so I need to investigate a lot of things, and I will dig. There's kind of a joke that like I have never met a rabbit hole that I didn't love to go down. But I just found everything I could on the internet, and like, yeah, I had never felt so seen. I remember sitting at the public service desk with tears in my eyes, because I was like, oh my gosh, this system gets me in a way that like you, the Myers-Briggs and the Enneagram, I was like, I don't fit that. I don't feel like I fit that. And that was really big. StrengthsFinder was also big at our library, but I never felt like I fit into it. And human design was like, oh, you don't fit into anything. This is just like reintroducing you to who you are. And I love that you say that the Akashic Records was about like remembering ourselves. And I feel the same way about human design. Like, I remember who I was born to be. And I just get such chills listening to you. And I find it interesting that you also have an undefined will center, but also that defined throat center, because I see people who I have an undefined throat center, and like learning to speak from experience has been a real learning experience for me. And that's part of the reason I started my podcast. And so I love that you have found that throat center to be a source of empowerment to now be speaking in a way that you didn't before. And you talked about on your podcast about, and I think you just mentioned it, like, you know, being seen and not heard. And so tell me a little bit more about this, like tapping into that throat center, and like what has made things different for you, even in addition to the podcast.
Oh, that's a great question. So I have that channel that's called Freak to Genius. And I remember telling people who have looked at my human design, being like, I just don't want people to think I'm weird. If I tell them about human design or Akashic Records, they're just going to think I'm weird. And these human design readers are like, honey, you are weird. Like, you just got to own it. You have the freak to genius. And so another thing I've shared is when I'm in conviction, and Julie, our teacher, our human design teacher, she talks about having conviction, right? And so when I have conviction and I'm in the right mind space and I'm with the right audience, what I will say is genius. So hopefully your audience, who's already a little familiar with human design, will think our conversation is genius, right? But if we were in a different environment, if people aren't open to hearing what we're talking about, I'm going to come off as a weird freak. And for so long, like I shared, because the other parts of my human design, I've just been, it's easier for me to stay quiet right? Because I didn't want that judgment. I lived a life of always needing external validation for everything. And it was partly these limiting beliefs that came up during childhood. So one story that I share is how when I was like about 4 years old, I'm just coloring away on my coloring book. It was like, I remember very vividly, it was a Snow White coloring book. And my mom came and sat down at the table next to me. And she was like, oh, Angela, you're doing this all wrong. You can't just scribble around. You can't color outside the lines. You need to be nice and neat. And you have to keep everything nicely and neatly in the line. And you colored this apple black. Apples are not black. They're red. So you did this all wrong. Like, and then, you know, like a four-year-old, you could feel that disappointment. Oh, my goodness. Like, I did everything wrong. My mom's not happy with me. And from then on, I had to perform. I had to be a little perfectionist. I had to seek external validation for everything. And that's when my voice, my throat shut down. And I no longer could trust myself and my own intuition. And I think it was all of that, like growing up, it served me well because I got good grades. I went to the good schools. Like I said, I checked all the boxes of what you're supposed to check in life to say you're successful. But it just, you know, I got to a certain point in my late 30s where I'm like, is this all there is? Like, why do I still feel so empty? And learning my human design is what gave me that power to say, these are innate strengths that I have shut down. So what can I do to heal those limiting beliefs and remember who I truly am? And it was all of that internal work, really like digging in, doing subconscious work to reconnect with my inner child and heal these like deeply rooted and seated thoughts in my head and say, no, it's okay. I can share my voice. Like, I'm not going to get struck down by lightning, which growing up, it was obviously easier to stay quiet. But the more that I was able to study and understand and have a solid foundation of my work, like at work, you know, I saw people get promoted and I wasn't. And they would always say, well, you need to speak up more in work and let people know that you're thinking or that you have something meaningful to share. But it felt so awkward and out of place. But once I had a better understanding of the business or whatever we were working on, then I felt more comfortable sharing my voice. And then once I did that more often, I internally kind of shifted how I saw myself and could see myself as a more competent and successful marketer. And now I'm in a place where other people recognize that. But it took a while for me to get there and really trust that, like, if I say something or ask that stupid question, no one's going to, like, kill me, which is really how my body felt when I was younger, because I never learned to overcome that as a child. And so I didn't get to do it until I was in my 30s in a more meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. And talk to me a bit about, you talked about being a people pleaser and like with the will center of the shadow is like needing to feel like you need to prove your worth. And which, yeah, I feel so deeply when I do a workshop with people, I say, how many of you have ever felt like you needed to prove your worth and like that this is the story of your life? And I can always tell from the hands that go up, like, who has an undefined will center. And then I say, like, look at your chart, and they're like, yep, that's me. So tell me a little bit more about that. And then also you mentioned being a sacral authority, correct?
Yes.
So talk about like how your decisions have changed also as your human design.
Yeah. So I have a completely open will center, which
same
means that this is like the biggest challenge that we have to overcome in our own life through our own experiences. But on the opposite end of it, once we master this for ourselves, this is the greatest gift that we can give others. So that's what I see for myself. All the story I've told you about being 4 years old and having to prove myself to, you know, not getting promoted and having managers basically tell me I need to speak up more and feeling very awkward and making that very hard for me. I realized that the biggest lesson I had to learn is that I'm worthy just the way I am. I don't have to prove myself. I think this, so my husband and I are both generators. My twin girls are generators, but my son is a projector. And this is like, this is, I think, what kind of helped come full circle for me once I learned the human design within our family, because my husband and I grew up being very performative, right? Like having to prove our worth. He has a different childhood and background than me, but we both are very similar in people pleasing, having to prove our worth, needing and seeking external validation for someone to pat me on the back and say, good girl, you did it, you earned this, and then I can feel good about myself. Mm-hmm. And so my son is a projector, and my husband at first was like, oh, he's just so lazy. He just wants to do the shortcuts. He never wants to work. And then the more I learned about his human design, I was like, well, actually, he's not meant to work the way we are. Like, we have this sacral, consistent sacral energy that makes us like crazy overachievers. But he doesn't have that. And the biggest thing that he's here to teach us is unconditional love, that we can love him just for being, not because of what he's doing. And for my husband and I, that was a big aha moment for us to, because, so my husband was like a big soccer player growing up. He did very, very well in soccer, and he did get hurt, so he didn't make it like too high up. But I think having his firstborn son, like that was a love and passion of his. He still has that love and passion. And not to be able to connect with his son on that, I think was very hard for him. And so we had to have a lot of conversations about, okay, well, he clearly is not a soccer player, our son. And so he was like, well, I just have to lower, like not even lower my expectations. He was like, I just can't have any expectations of him because he's just like such a different child. And I was like, but can you lower your or I don't think lowering or not having expectations is a good place to be either. But I was like, can you still love him if he's not a soccer player, right? And my husband's like, of course, I'll always love him because he's my son. And I think like having these types of conversations, because as parents, you put like so much projection on your kids. All the things that you didn't get as a child, you want your kids to exemplify that or have that experience. And so this being a parent is another thing that just cracked me open and just made me reflect on my own childhood. And so for us, we recognized we didn't have to keep pushing him to go play with the other kids. If he wanted to sit and observe, that's okay, because that's just how his energy is. So we tried many, many times. The kid's not ever, ever going to be a soccer player. But this fall, my husband put him into tackle football. And for him, this is the perfect sport for him. I saw him come alive this year because he needs that short burst, like just go tackle that guy. You do it for 30 seconds and then you can break for like 3 minutes. You know, like it's not soccer. You got to run up and down the field. He just doesn't have that energy. But he can tackle someone to the ground in your 30 seconds. And he just like never had that type of sport before. And now, and he's fourth grade. So he's joining this team, never played football before or tackle football. And most of the other kids have been playing at least like flag football for a couple of years. So he was one of like three or four kids who were new to the football team. And once his team recognized his skill, right, and really encouraged him, he's finally being invited, which is the strategy for projectors. You need to feel invited. You need to wait for that invitation, which he never had. Like, in soccer, he's just like lost among the crowd. Like he just sat on the sideline most of the game. No one's recognizing him. He's not meaningfully contributing to the team. And then he just feels terrible about himself and thinks he's a bad athlete, which he's not a bad athlete, but he's not a good soccer player. I think we just need to like come to terms with that. But he, this year, and football, it just ended. It's only like 2.5 months the season. But he came alive this year. And as a mom, I felt so, I don't even know what a word is, but just so filled up by seeing my child who has never been an athlete now being accepted and recognized and feels like he's part of this football team because they recognize his contribution. And it has just helped his self-esteem soar so much, which is amazing. Like, maybe a little too much because now he thinks he's like ready for the NFL, which he's not yet. But he's never had that before because now that I know he's a projector, I know how to give him those opportunities. And we know, and we can just recognize and love him for who he is and not like pushing him to do soccer just because my husband did soccer. And so I know you talk a lot about how understanding human design and relationships and other members of your family has been huge. And this has been like one of the most eye-opening experiences for me because it finally allowed, through our son, my husband and I, to recognize for ourselves, we don't need to prove ourselves anymore either. Because we know that we can love our son unconditionally just for who he is. And now we can turn that mirror back on ourselves and recognize we don't need to burn out. We don't need to continue to hustle at work or whatever and keep people pleasing because we can love ourselves just the way we are.
Oh, I love that story about your son. That's just amazing, especially the projector being recognized for his contributions. That's so powerful. And I'm sure as a mom that just... I mean, I'm getting teary-eyed listening to you, and I love that so much for you. I love that so much for your kid and your family.
Thank you.
So, Angela, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you. I love hearing your story and your human design journey. And so where can people find you and to learn more about you?
Yes. Yeah, so my podcast is called This Is How She Does It, and you can find it on Apple and Spotify. And I also right now have a free masterclass on my website. So it's angelaleecoaching.com/masterclass. And this masterclass is for these high achieving women who feel burnt out. And so I take you through how your human design can help you, understanding your human design can help you get out of burnout mode. So I really talk about the be, do, have success formula that, again, our teacher, Julie Chiardi, talks a lot about. And so I kind of walk people through how can we reframe what success means to us. Like I said, I for a long time thought success meant checking all those boxes, getting the good grades, getting into good school, buying the house, having the kids on the picket fence. And when I felt so burnt out and lonely and like looking for that deeper soul connection and started doing this work on myself, shifting and really encompassing that be, do, have framework has really helped me overcome my burnout struggle. So it's a free masterclass where I kind of take you through that. And I know you also help your clients with human design, but this could be another way to kind of another angle to view human design. So I'll share all those links with you if you want to share that with your audience.
Yeah, all the links will be in the show notes to the show and to the masterclass. So thank you, Angela, for being my first guest. This was such an honor. And we will talk to you soon.
Thank you, Erica.
If you enjoy this episode, I would love it if you would tap the plus sign to follow the show so you don't miss what's coming next. And if you're feeling generous, leave me a quick review that helps other people find Unfolding. I would be so grateful for your support. It means the world. If there's someone in your life who you know would love these conversations, please share it with a friend or a colleague. Thanks for being here. Be well, and I'll see you next time.